And hello, everyone. I am Diwa De Boer here in Auckland, New Zealand. Also, still safely under house arrest, although I haven't even really noticed much. We've been in level three for nearly 2 weeks now. I still don't believe I've left the house. It's business as usual here, and I'm probably not likely to leave the house in the next couple of months anyway. So I'll stay. It's winter. You can see I've got the jacket on for the first time in months. It's winter's here. There's no reason to go anywhere anymore.
The audience couldn't hear me for that first part, so I'll say again. It is.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yes, I forgot to unmute myself. Here we go. Here. So to say for a second time, it is 6 p.m. here in Melbourne, Victoria, Australia. Welcome to Trad Tasman Talk on Friday, May the 8th, 2020. And yes, despite Australia outlining its road to recovery to a COVID-safe Australia under our dear leader, Daniel Andrews, we are still under house arrest till at least Monday, after Scott Morrison made his address with his flashy graphs. COVID safe Australia, it sort of sounds like, what do you call it, future proofing Australia. And we're now not in lockdown stages, we're in recovery stages. We have a three-step recovery stages or phases, whatever you want to call it. Hello to everyone in the live chat. We are live on the Unshackled and Right Minds YouTube channels. If you're watching on the Unshackled, you can send a super chat directly through YouTube by pressing the dollar amount in the live chat, choosing your amount and message, and we'll read it out on the show.
Very good. And it will be probably another very COVID-19 heavy show, so please do inject some levity and other topics in as you see fit. We would appreciate that, else it all becomes the depressing coronavirus show.
It's not
forever.
Compulsory to inject additional things into the chat. We're pro-choice when it comes to injecting things.
Yes, that's right. That is one of our topics for tonight. So we do have a few. I mean, even that is still very much related to coronavirus, and that's one of the problems we have with our current events show. Is that when the current events end up being the same for months on end, we end up talking about the same things, and we're in the same situation now, especially with the recent breaking news in New Zealand about the legality of the level 4 lockdown, and probably the current stage of lockdown as well. Is something I've been raising week after week on the show, and so most of it I've already said, except obviously that we now have some more evidence to back it up. A lot, you know, various different lawyers, former attorney general, actually leaked Crown Law advice, you know, all pointing towards the fact that, you know, the government didn't have this kind of power to lock everybody in their homes, which would make sense because that's usually not the kind of legislation that it gets passed into law by a free society, you know, just in case it might be needed. That's the kind of stuff that you have in law in an authoritarian dictatorship like, you know, China, which is exactly who we emulated, except as it turns out, not quite legal in New Zealand.
Well, Dan Andrews, he's also emulating China. He actually wants China's help to rebuild Victoria's shattered economy, which both he and China shat on together because he signed us up at the end of last year to China's One Belt, One Road globalist infrastructure program. And I think it's called that, One Belt, One Road, because it's one way from the people that sign up to it back to China.
Yeah, exactly. And it fast tracks the latest disease into your country as well. And especially once you got it there, I saw Iran is apparently signing up to several billion dollars in various, we're calling it like one belt, one coronavirus, one health, something like that. They had tied in healthcare, and they were going to bail out Iranian health, sorry, bail out as in, you know, take control over the Iranian healthcare system via the one belt, one road system. So,
Well, we've had our own local outbreak this week at a halal slaughterhouse called Cedar Meats. I've got screen sharing capacity here. No, that doesn't.
we're still in our respective lockdown locations. So, we've been pretty good for technical difficulty so far. So, you can give it another go. And
So Cedar Meats, which is in Western Melbourne, this is turning into one of the biggest local coronavirus clusters. 71 cases have been linked to this halal slaughterhouse. It's responsible for most of the new cases or the new spike that we've had recently. And the facility has been shut. It was announced last Sunday night that it was an unnamed meatworks. They didn't reveal where it was to avoid panic, but they outed themselves, Cedar Meats, and it turned out that they've donated $15,000 to the Victorian Labor Party in the past year. And I know the state opposition, they've called it Victoria's Ruby Princess debacle, that infamous cruise ship, which was allowed to just dock despite a lot of those on board having flu-like symptoms. There has been a cluster in New South Wales at Newmarch aged care facility run by Anglicare. So that has been linked to, I think, about 16 deaths. There's been no deaths linked to the Cedar Meats outbreak. Not even any of them have been admitted to hospital or ICU. Mm-hmm. They've obviously been isolated. But Daniel Andrews has been saying that we're keeping us all locked in our homes. It's keeping us safe. And as soon as Scott Morrison was finished today, Daniel Andrews came out and said, "No, I have no announcements to make today until Monday, where I'll announce in the future we'll be implementing some aspects of stage one recovery relaxation. This is done not to confuse people."
It's actually a sort of a problem in New Zealand where the stage they announced all of the stages at first, all of the levels, but now every time we move a level, they have to redo everything. So we're currently in still level 3, but they just announced level 2 2 days ago. But it's not going to be implemented until Jacinda reviews what she wants to do on Monday. And then we'll know on Monday if it's going to be rolled over sometime next week. Into that level. And then the question, there's obviously a lot of confusion around who do these guidelines apply to, and there's a lot of if you're this kind of business you need to do this, if you're that kind of business you need to do that, and it gets complicated. I mean, I sent you the page before. Most of the New Zealanders will have seen it. The COVID-19 level 2 alert system is about, I don't know if I were to print it out, it would probably be about 10 pages or something, and that's the non-clarified version.
They went to level 4, what they called level 4, immediately, and now they're deciding what the levels below are. Yes. At least we made it up as
as we were ascending
to it. We didn't just make up. How did they decide that was level 4? I assume they don't know what level 1 is.
Well, we do know what level 1 is right now, but we know that level 1 will be different when we get to level 1. So there's no point actually knowing what level 1 is. Because
but
by
how
will
it be different from level 2?
So we had level 4. Everybody knows what level 4 is. Level 3 is like level 4, but with KFC. And so level 2 will be like level 4, but with hairdressers. So you can allow to have hairdressers. You're allowed to go to the mall. So you're basically most shops and hairdressers and things and cafes, even cafes and bars and et cetera. the butchers, so kind of shopping. You can do shopping. The rugby will come back, of course. It's a very important thing. And I believe your domestic travel maybe is the big one. Domestic travel is allowed again.
Because it's still on the agenda, this trans-Tasman trade bubble, which will include, obviously, commercial flights and tourism. But that is down the track at the moment. I'll show you, because we're big on the infographics in Australia when it comes to the coronavirus lockdown and the road to a recovery. So that's the more complex one there. Three-step framework for COVID safe Australia. It's hard to read there. You have to blow it up on a mega screen there. But this is basically a summary of the roadmap to a COVID safe Australia. And then there's the asterisk, state and territories will move it at different times based on local conditions. So step one, up to 5 visitors at your home, gatherings of up to 10 outside of the home, work from home.
So is that on your front lawn? Like if you want to,
well, people.
Like volleyball, like 5-a-side outside your house.
Yeah, that's unclear there, but I assume that our enlightened premiers will set it out for us better. Libraries, community centers, playgrounds and boot camps open. I think we've heard more about boot camps during the lockdown than we have at any other time. Australians can do more shopping, restaurants and cafes, home sales and auctions, local playgrounds, outdoor boot camps, local and regional travel. And then in step two, most businesses reopen with physical distancing and hygiene, gatherings up to 20 outside of your home, work from home. If it works for you and your employer, Australians can even do more gatherings, so of up to 20. So gyms, beauty therapists, so you can get a wax, cinemas, theatres or amusement parks, galleries and museums.
As long as there's only 20 people inside of them, right?
Yeah. Some interstate travel, state and territories may allow larger numbers in some circumstances. And then step three, all Australians return to work with physical distancing and hygiene. Gatherings up to 100, return to workplace. Consider cross-Tasman, Pacific Island travel and international student travel. Australians can even do more in gatherings up to 100. Food courts can open, so can saunas and bathhouses. And all interstate travel. Yeah, I'm surprised that they decided in this more less detailed one to emphasize that at stage three, saunas and bathhouses can open. I didn't realize that it was such a vital part of our economic recovery or
maybe part of your mental, physical, mental well-being.
Yeah, mental and physical health.
So, looking at this list here, actually, New Zealand's level two, which we may be, Jacinda permitting, will be going into next week, will be all of that stuff that's outlined there with the gathering limits of 100, maybe. The door's been left open to kind of wind that back a little bit. So we're sort of looking at all of that being available, but all businesses need to have certain plans in place.
Yeah,
they need to wipe down all of these surfaces. So any surfaces that anybody might touch need to be wiped down, every hour or something like that. I don't think they've said how often, but they will probably clarify that. And then you'll have, all this stuff has to be contactless, all the distancing has to be in place. Or you have to keep the records. Anybody who comes you have to be able to trace them, like take their name and phone number or their address.
Because you don't have an app in New Zealand.
We don't have an app, no. We're a low-tech society. We are not able to develop anything on the scale of Australia. And so it's a situation where a lot of businesses may just say, can't do it. Other businesses will be running at such a reduced capacity. People will probably be staying home anyway, because the polling, the surveys keep showing that people enjoy the lockdown still. So the pain hasn't really hit home yet. Like people haven't lost, people are losing their jobs, but they haven't reached the point where they can't be paid out, where their payouts haven't run out yet, so they're still in the stage for 4-week payout, redundancy payments. And then you have the businesses who took the wage subsidy have 12 weeks before they can lay anybody off. So anybody who's got a dead job walking basically hasn't been fired yet. So people are still loving the lockdown, and that will make it difficult in terms of people actually going back to work, you know, businesses opening, people going back to work, people going back to buy things. So we're going to see some very, I think we're going to see some very, very strange behavior, and all the forecasts are up in the air as to why anybody would go back to anything. So that's kind of why I'm saying, like, well, I'm still staying, in that sense, I'm still staying home, even with everything in place. You know, if I want to go back into my office to work, there's like, I have to go and like, and do all of this weird stuff and wash my hands with hand sanitizer and try and stay 2 meters away from everyone, et cetera, et cetera. It's easier to just, for many places, just say, okay, we're just going to stay home. You know, in terms of people who can work from home, we'll keep doing that. And the programming that they've done to everyone to stay away from places, that's likely going to stick. It'll take a while to wear off, or people start to feel like, okay, we're going to go back to do this and that now. Because the schools that have been allowed to open, the daycares, et cetera, we've already seen, very few people have shown interest in that, even when they have been told that they're allowed to go back to XYZ, they've still stayed at home. So that is the unexpected consequences that will be felt down the line.
Yeah, I am wondering whether some people and also some businesses will continue working from home, because they actually, and I'd be curious to see it, some productivity data from businesses that have been able to fully function with their employees working from home, whether the productivity is the same or is lower or higher, because certainly we've always told about the new normal after the lockdown, and obviously humans are creatures of habit and don't like change. This is a change that's been forced on them. There are many people who, well, they don't like being forced in their homes under the point of a gun or a large fine, but they're sort of comfortable working from home. Like I've adjusted well to having home studio set up here. The quality has been most of the time pretty much the same in terms of the technical and content. Beginning of the last two shows at the beginning discounted, but it's sort of you've got to commute for 30, 40 minutes to and from. Obviously, you're in a situation where you are able to fully work from home. Mm-hmm. So you mentioned the sort of difficulty of going back to the office, and then there's obviously the relationship with your employer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's as far as I can see, we're going to have a lot of cases of where people will stay at home if they can. I know a lot of people who have wanted to go back. In fact, people have gone back to work. You know, it's fine. It's completely legal to go back to work. And as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, the sort of the legality of them stopping you is far more up for question than whether you can legally go about your normal business. You have far more you have far stronger grounds than them trying to stop you. So we are seeing a case already where people who really want to go back to doing things have already done that. People who are happy where they are, they've stayed there, and that's going to vary from employee to employee, and of course from employer to employer. It's going to depend a lot on how productive people are able to be, and there's likely to be some permanent changes there. But to focus here on the legality, which I mentioned earlier, we had documents leaked a few days ago, yesterday, the Crown Law advice that I'd actually referred to in previous episodes, and say, well, okay, was this legal? Was it legal to enforce a level 4 lockdown? Because if I've read the Health Act, read the Pandemic Act, et cetera, the state of emergency, even that doesn't give the government the power to lock healthy people into their houses. Right? It gives them the power to go where somebody's life could be in danger, where somebody is sick, or somebody has whatever disease, they then have that authority to go and override people's rights. But they don't have the ability to go after healthy people. So that's a and so the people who were prosecuted under a level 4 lockdown, especially early on, likely were done so against the law. The Attorney General won't release the advice himself, and he says, oh, this is just a draft. This is just a draft. Okay, cool. Can we see the final version, which you know, which will contradict the draft? No, we can't, because obviously it doesn't. He had to do a live stream today for an hour explaining why he won't release the information. A big backup they had going for him, which I mentioned earlier, as well as the public, a lot of public buy-in, people are still happy. And overall, if you tell me, well, this was illegal, on the whole, people are still saying, well, who cares? They saved lives. Doesn't matter if it was illegal, et cetera, et cetera. All right. On the whole, people don't understand that the rule of law is above the government, and the government should, you know, be held by the law, else you're living in either a police state or a dictatorship. Though these kinds of things perhaps will come back to haunt the government, who knows? It's difficult. It's a case where most people don't care about the legal technicalities. So makes it, you know, that makes it difficult in terms of whether or not there will be any repercussions. Like, will there be mass lawsuits from the people who went bankrupt? Because they will obviously be able to say, now, well, the government unlawfully closed my business. The health minister has been under fire, but the health minister's disappeared because who knows where he is? Who doesn't matter? So the Ministry of Health has been under fire because they declined visitation rights for anybody who requested them, who said, oh, I'd like to visit my dying father or my dying mother or any other relative. And they declined all of them. And one guy went to court and had that overruled, right, to say, yes, actually, you can go and visit your father who's dying. They can't stop you. And so there's a bigger review being done into that. So it's just, there's a case of where the messaging, the marketing of this worked so well that the public had buy-in, but there's no legal support for it. And that means that there are a lot of cases of people who can say that they were not treated fairly under the law because they were not able to visit a dying relative because their business went bankrupt, and on it goes. So we'll have to see in the coming, I mean, this subject will probably come back in the next couple of weeks and months as all of these cases develop.
Jacinta Ardern's lockdown power, did just refresh my memory here, did that come from an existing Emergency Power Act? And we've already been through that New Zealand has a legislated Bill of Rights, not a constitutional Bill of Rights.
Yes, and so they didn't ask for any legislation before her doing any of this, although the National Party would have happily given it to them because they voted to suspend Parliament and, you know, invoke the national emergency, etc. They were happy to do all of this. So the fact that essentially they didn't care, right? They didn't really care what the legal basis was. They thought, okay, cool, this is what China did, and we're going to do what China did, and everything will go well, and everybody will love us, which so far is what's happened. And they likely will be pushing now legislation to make the level 2 restrictions legal. So they're talking about legislation to make the 2-meter social distancing a law, to limit gatherings to 100. And again, like, they're going to stop the state of emergency. So we're no longer in a state of emergency. And then they're going to pass legislation that limits public gatherings. So that means that you're in a state where essentially protest against the government is illegal, like enforced by law. And it's going to be a really big question of, okay, well, is the rest of Parliament going to go along with this next week? And that will be quite interesting to see how that develops. They'll likely push it under urgency. A week prior, they accidentally passed the wrong legislation. They tabled a bill, and accidentally had a clause in there that allowed the IRD to give $8 billion in loans to businesses. And they rushed it through Parliament in 3 hours, and then was like, oops, by the time it was done. So that's the kind of stuff that's going on, right? But most people don't care about the technicalities. But there's some super dodgy stuff happening.
Yeah. I've mentioned that in Victoria, Dan Andrews' powers come from enacting already legislated state of emergency powers. And The second state of emergency expires on May the 11th, which is Monday. And so he's been adamant that there's not going to be any relaxation before Mother's Day, which is a Sunday. And he said that Victoria Police, they're still on the watch, who will find people who are deliberately flouting restrictions, undoing all our hard work. And he says he's also waiting on test results from a testing blitz for the past fortnight, 125,000. Tests, some figure like that. He always says the size of an MCG, which is 100,000. So we're all wondering, is there going to be some sort of Victoria Police blitz on Mother's Day, because you're not allowed to visit your mother, and so Victoria Police going to pull people over and say you're not off to visit your mother, are you? Which is basically getting into Pol Pot communist level territory.
it's insane, right? It's just the most. And we have the number of active cases that we have, the number of new cases that show up are 0, 1, or 2. Those are the most common numbers we have in New Zealand. The cases that do show up are directly related to existing clusters and are always family members living in the households of existing, you know, or in what they call the bubbles here. And somebody in the chat has said that they never want to hear that word ever again. And I completely agree with them. But for now, we have to keep using it. So people in the same bubble still. So the only new cases that we're getting recently are from people within the same, you know, bubble as people who previously already had had the virus. And the number of deaths, again, the last couple of deaths we had, again, were dementia patients, which obviously is still sad, but they're far, you know, these people have, you know, very complicated health issues and are less likely to be able to, you know, that they don't really know what's going on in terms of, you know, things that you can do to look after yourself. So it's just to me mind-boggling that we're not going anywhere. But the reason the restrictions are really staying, I can't focus on this enough, is that the public buy-in, as the Attorney General David Parker used in his live stream explaining why he couldn't release any advice, but the surveys, polling keep showing that people actually are essentially enjoying being in lockdown.
That's right. Yeah, they're certainly Victorians who believe that Dan Andrews can do no wrong, and he's kept us safe, even though we've had one of the worst clusters outbreaks during since the lockdown began. And I'll just go through our coronavirus. This is another infographic. I told you we were fond of these. So as you can see, we a total case is 6,896, but 6,035 recovered. So we have less than 1,000 active cases, 97 deaths, 23 currently in ICU. Daniel Andrews, he wanted the Melbourne's Exhibition and Convention Centre to be a makeshift morgue intensive care unit. That's how doomsday he was prepared to go. 58 in hospital, and conducted 722,000 tests, 1% positive rate. And if you have a look at Victoria, because he's tried to claim that our circumstances are different to other states, but if you look at Victoria's positive rate, 0.8%, we are below the national average there. So how can he say we're in a different circumstance there? And he's also said that, oh, we've got a large amount of community transmission, which is, if you see this graph here, it's the orange bit there. I mean, ours is large there, but New South Wales is larger. And we have less than half the cases that New South Wales does, overall cases. They've had 3,044. Victoria's got 1,455. And you're allowed to have two adults and two children over in New South Wales. That began last Friday night. So it was described by, I mentioned last week.
So you have
Gideon Rosner.
You have Mother's Day in New South Wales, just to confirm that. So
and in Queensland,
they will be celebrating.
Queensland is 5 people. South Australia, Western Australia, Tasmania, yeah. 10 people. So, Daniel Andrews, like a true communist, has ruined, cancelled Mother's Day.
And people love him for it, and they will love him for it. It's difficult to understand, but you sort of get a little bit of an appreciation for how the authoritarian dictatorships work and how the Pol Pot's rise to power. It kind of starts to make a little bit of sense now to me, at least when I read the history books. I won't have to go, how on earth could people do this? It'll be rather clear.
You mentioned the legality of the lockdown in New Zealand. Victoria has the largest on the spot fine for contravening the lockdown, $1,600, but I don't know if anyone has been stupid enough to pay it yet. Of course, in all Western countries, you don't have to give any comment to the police, and so the only way that you would receive a fine if you waived your right to silence, because they ask you, "Oh, why are you out here?" Then they confess what they're doing, and then the police can make a subjective determination about whether that's a reasonable excuse. If you just give them no comment, they can't prove anything one way or the other. But because there is the individual police officers, and I've given you examples of the more overzealous ones in Victoria, because they have discretion, it's subjective, these could all still get thrown out in court, especially since they fined 26 refugee activists outside a detention center in Preston in Melbourne's north. Yeah. And you can guarantee that the Human Rights and Asylum Seeker Resource Center lawyers who are happy to work for free will be contesting those. And if a few get knocked out, then that sets a precedent for all of them. So, and that would be a significant, put an even more a deeper hit into Victoria's finances, because we are leading the nation with the unemployment rate as well. The Victorian, it was the Federal Treasurer's economic forecast. We're projected to have a $100 billion budget deficit for this year. So obviously that surplus that was projected for the 2019-20 financial year is not happening. And we're projected to have 10% unemployment, 10% growth retraction. And even though it will be legal for some pubs and restaurants to reopen with venue capacities, it's simply not viable until they can, until they're allowed to have more patronage, like it's lifted to 100.
Well, exactly. And that's something we mentioned right at the beginning of the show, was the case of, your business can be open, but is it even worth it?
That's what Myer in Australia, they didn't have to close, but they decided to close all of their stores nationwide during the lockdown, and we don't know. Well, many people are doubting whether they'll reopen.
And there's a lot of places in New Zealand now, especially in the hospitality sector, that are completely cleared out. I reckon all of the bars, restaurants, many eateries in the CBDs just gone, not coming back. And it goes as far as GPs and dentists, and it's going to be widespread. We've got some estimates here in New Zealand, and this is from April, but mid-April, estimates showing that unemployment could go as high as 300,000 in September, which is when the election is. So again, this is why I think the election will be held. You've got to sneak you've got to get the election in before the full effects of the economic depression come through. Our current unemployment, I mean, our prior unemployment, I should say, end of last year, was at about 100,000. So basically going to triple our unemployment, which, would put us in about the 10%. And I think this is probably optimistic as well. We may lose about 10% of GDP by the time we get around to next year, especially since we've been, we extended level 4. We possibly may extend level 2. That's still up in the air at this stage. level 3 may still be extended. Level 2 definitely seems to be, you know, sort of indefinite, especially if they're going to pass legislation to support it. Means that, you know, there's this huge, huge economic repercussions, and the people who weren't, you know, people who weren't ready for it are going to be in for a very, very rude awakening.
They've often justified the continued lockdown, the lockdown lovies, people like both our dear leaders, because, well, I mentioned last week the full title of Victoria. It's now the People's Democratic Socialist Republic of Dan Andrews Dan. That is the full title of our state now. And because, as I said, Scott Morrison, he unveiled this three-step plan, but the asterisks there, and so much for people saying that too much power is centralized in the federal government. The real second wave that we've got to worry about, and it's getting more attention now, is the mental health and suicide increase,
yeah,
as well. And it's finally gained some media attention this week, because modeling has been released that the not just the lockdown itself, but the continuing economic recession or depression it can result in an extra 1,500 suicides per year. And this is modeling, so we know how unreliable modeling is. But if we've gotten freaked out over climate change and coronavirus modeling, then surely this modeling should be paid attention to as well. And this concern about increased mental health and suicide, it's been highlighted by quite some distinguished mental health professionals, such as former Australian Mental Health Commissioner Professor Ian Hickey and former Australian of the Year Professor Patrick McGorry. So certainly not some randos who are just trying to get headlines. These are distinguished people.
Oh, absolutely. And there's still, you know, there's not much that's published around the suicide statistics in New Zealand. I've heard personal stories, various, so from friends of friends, et cetera, who have committed suicide in the past month and a half, 2 months. We're seeing people saying that they estimate possibly as many as 60 a week in New Zealand. And that means we're talking, you know, thousands upon thousands of suicides in a year in New Zealand, especially if this is protracted. So that's likely to be a huge killer. And obviously, we've only had about 20, you know, 21 deaths from coronavirus in New Zealand. So the number of suicides, you know, due to coronavirus-related fallout will already be well beyond the disease related deaths are. We are estimating between 400 and 1,500 cancer related deaths due to delayed cancer screenings, which have been down by by 40%.
Surgery delays, which are not really elective surgeries, they're non-urgent surgeries.
That's you're not going to die in the next few hours.
But you could die in a few months, years. Have a short lifespan.
Yeah, and that's the case. And so the estimates that we're already seeing on there are, you know, from just these two sources alone, could be in the thousands already. You know, and so in the long run, and you know, we don't know yet. Right. But the question, and of course, the models have to be re-examined. Were the coronavirus models that were modeling, I think in New Zealand, the highest one was something like 40,000 deaths, which, you know, and will turn out to be complete garbage, especially if we look at countries that didn't have a lockdown at all. They're seeing nothing like those numbers at all. Countries that just continue to go about their normal business are seeing, you know, that are similar size to New Zealand. Probably Sweden is an okay comparison. They've seen maybe 1,000 or 2,000 tops.
Well, they're up to 3,000 deaths.
That's three. Okay, and so they're
like, I didn't support lockdown. I supported social restrictions, and it was sold to us that we've got to flatten the curve, and we did that. As soon as that happened, it should have been lifted some of the social restrictions. I never supported stay-at-home orders. That's just another term for house arrest. That's the correct way
But even in Sweden, their final numbers are flattening out now as well, and but they're going to be in the thousands, not tens of thousands, and that's pretty much what we're seeing now. And I've seen in the chat somebody saying that 3,500 people have had their cancer symptoms or haven't had their cancer symptoms investigated. So we are definitely talking about thousands. And comment correction is saying that on the day the lockdown was announced, it was said 80,000 deaths in New Zealand. So that's that's a pretty big difference. Obviously, I'll quote this here. It's not a super chat, but it says big difference between 80,000 and 21. Yeah, but the rationale was if we do nothing, then it will be 80,000. And thanks to Jacinda Ardern's quick action, we have saved 79,900 and can't do quick maths on air, but 79 lives. That's kind of what they'll be saying. But you need to be able to look at countries that didn't do this lockdown, that maybe have a similar population or per capita, and that basically where the governments gave advice. And even Japan it can be an example where their governments basically said, no, we don't have the constitutional authority to lock you in your homes, but here are our recommendations. Okay, and on the most part, people follow those recommendations. And the same thing would have happened in New Zealand if they had said, look, we can't weld you into your houses, but here are the recommendations. Okay, and 99% of the population would have said, okay, that's fine, we'll follow those recommendations, and then you would have had very similar outcome as well. So and that's what we're going to see looking at those countries, and when we add up all of the deaths related to the fallout, when we add up the billions of dollars of economic cost, et cetera, of something like a lockdown, then it's going to become, where we are sitting at already right now, without being in the future, being able to tell where this is going to go, it's looking rather obvious as to, which course of action will have won. And if we were to look at historical disease control, lockdowns are never part of that, right? It was always you quarantine the sick, you focus on health, various health measures. You don't lock everybody in their houses. Okay, who locks people in their houses? Authoritarian regimes. Okay, the Communist Party of China locks people in their houses. And that's basically our government looked at the Communist Party of China and said, look, we're going to throw out all of the stuff that we've done in the past when it comes to handling pandemics, and we're just going to do what the Communist Party of China did. And
we should not trust their data. And that's it.
Right. And so we, whether anybody will be held to account down the line, once we do have all of the data, will be an interesting question. But I really do hope that we'll be in a case where most people who are currently saying, "Oh no, this is great because we don't have all the information," we've been saved from a worst case scenario of 80,000 deaths, that we'll get to the point where everything can be presented clearly and we can say, okay, that was a mistake, let's not do that again.
I know that those advocating for freedom and human rights are something the left used to say that they cared about, that's selfish, or you want people to die. But if you look at this mental health opening, mental health modeling, if you wish to continue the lockdown, because there are still those who are saying, "Yeah, let's keep going." Oh, it's so annoying, these people who want to play golf and go fishing and, mm-hmm. and hunting. If you want to continue the lockdown, you want people to kill themselves because that is what's happening.
And so that's exactly what's going on every single
emotional
day.
Emotional blackmail. Yep.
And that is indeed the emotional blackmail that you could be using, and would be the complete reverse of what has been used to get us into the situation, is exactly that. Right now, if we were to go to level zero, back to normal, it's extremely likely that nobody would die from coronavirus. Right? It's not guaranteed, but it's quite likely that nobody would die.
Queensland, they were the largest state to relax a stay-at-home orders and open up recreational activities. They've had a couple of days without any new cases. There hasn't been any spike or anything. In fact, it's been the lockdown state, Victoria, which has had the cluster. And Queensland's had no clusters.
You've just brought something back into my memory as well. We started to see a drop-off in cases before we enter the lockdown, essentially, or shortly after we enter the lockdown. So you've got a two-week period, right, where you get a two-week incubation period. We should have seen cases continue to spike for 2 weeks as we were in lockdown. That's not actually what happened. Cases started to level off about a week into lockdown, which means that a week before the lockdown, people had already taken enough action to, as I say, flatten the curve to completely suppress the disease. That's what the case data shows us as well. Maybe not as much as we had with a complete lockdown, but like you're saying, if every day that you're in the lockdown costs lives. Every day that you spend in the lockdown, people will die because of the lockdown every single day. It's not for the government to decide. Okay, cool. We're going to basically overrule what would be a natural disease, and then we're going to kill people with our state enforced disease of lockdown. That's what they're picking, and that's really where the continued lockdown is completely and utterly immoral, because a death from state imposed lockdown is actually far worse than of natural causes, even though both are tragic.
Part of the reason why Jacinta gets away with all of this is because you've got a piss-weak mainstream media which doesn't ask her the tough questions. But as we've seen the past week, she gets quite triggered when just the slightest amount of scrutiny is put on her, and it seems to all come from the one source, this show called the AM show, which is sort of like our show, a hybrid television and radio show.
Yep.
I've got the clip here.
Play the clip.
Yeah, this was the Duncan Gardner, the host. This was on Monday.
What is it that you're looking for to move us to level two? What's the figure you're looking for? Because I reckon this week looks like last week, and next week could look like this week. And all the international experts are saying that this is going to be the new normal for months and months and months. What are we waiting for?
I didn't realise you're an epidemiologist. Congratulations on your new qualifications,
Duncan. If you
want
to get personal, that's fine, but I'm just asking the question.
That's for a national leader to be snarky like that. That's pretty, I'd say that's degrading the office. I mean, we support Trump, and but he's dealing with a deliberate hostile media. That was a fair point that he was making there. And I'm aware that another incident occurred on this show with the sports presenter Mark Richardson saying he'd be a better prime minister, which I have no idea who he is, but I reckon he would, just based on
I mean, part of the prime minister's job at the moment is just to do as they're told, right? So there's nothing being done that would be particularly there's nothing that would shift the responsibility to her, right? It's all deferral, right? Mm-hmm. Here's the advice I was given. And the fact that it's obviously his job to ask questions, right? It's obviously the job of these journalists to ask these questions. And it's that snarky online response that's like, oh no, you're commenting on anything about coronavirus. How dare you? You have a degree. That's basically right. That's basically it, right? It's like the online troll. And the AM, you just mentioned the AM show. It's on News Hub, and they run a radio. Their radio show is called Magic Talk, and I think that was done on purpose to disassociate itself from News Hub, which is not very favorably reviewed.
Their favorite print reporter, Patrick Bauer.
Absolutely. but their radio station is amazing. I was interviewed on there a couple of days ago, and they're tough on everybody, and they're actually always good fun. So a lot of people listen to it. It may be able to take on Newstalk ZB as the top radio station eventually. Who knows? Because they really do focus on getting the guys who will go tough and go hard on everybody. I was going to mention just before you played that clip, the thought came into my head of the line that she keeps using is the go, we went early, we went hard, or go early, go hard. None of that is actually true. They didn't close the borders at the crucial moment when they should have. When people pushed her to close the borders 2 weeks before she didn't do it for 2 weeks. And then at 2 weeks too late, she did, after we had a lot of cases in New Zealand. And then she started saying, oh yeah, we went early, we went hard, we went early, we went hard. And she keeps repeating this lie every single day. But it's not true, because 2 weeks too late, right? And then it was basically too late, too hard, is essentially what happened.
It's sort of like Minority Report territory, that you could see the pre-pandemic, that you could see all of these deaths, and so you can justify your egregious human rights violations, that you save these lives based on how in Minority
Report. But that's is exactly the justification. Mm. That's exactly it. Our computer models show this, and we picked the worst computer model we could find to give the worst outcome, cough, cough, just like they do with global warming, and then to say, hi, look what we did, look how we saved the world, when, in fact, if you had done nothing, the worst case would never have happened, because it was fake to begin with.
We've got a super chat here in the Unshackled YouTube chat from Diana Marsden, who's sent us quite a number of super chats over the past a few weeks, so thank you for that. $10 Australian. Good show, bros. My house literally burnt down on Wednesday. Still an avid follower. I'm sorry to hear that.
That's terrible.
I remember that you're a Kiwi, but based here in Melbourne. So you're in the two totalitarian states of Australia, because Jacinta, she joined our national cabinet on Tuesday, so she was adhering to the original Australian constitution by joining our national cabinet.
I'm glad you made that comment. I was totally expecting you to make that comment at some time during the show, as when I heard that Jacinta Ardern would be part of the Australian national cabinet, I was like, oh, there we go. We finally fulfilled the intent of the original Australian constitution. Yeah.
Well, I know that some lefties on Twitter were saying, oh, I hope that this is part of a strategy to have her as the Prime Minister of all of the Tasman states and territories now. Though,
I'm going to have to pour myself another glass of gin after that.
Well, the drinks are on ice for me as a Victorian at the moment. Because definitely, if you're going to drink on air, it should be to sort of as celebratory rather than to drown your sorrows.
Yeah, oh, I agree with that. This is the first drink I've had since the beginning of the lockdown. But since I heard that they're going to pass legislation, I was like, I won't drink until the end of the lockdown. But since they're passing legislation to keep level two going forever, I thought, okay, well, now's as good a time as any. I finished a whole bunch of big projects for work and for other political activities, and we're basically at the end of level three-ish lockdown, maybe, perhaps. So this is kind of my semi-celebratory moment at the moment, because it doesn't seem like it's going to, there's not going to be a big, there's not going to be a big moment where it's like, oh yeah, we're suddenly free. It's like we're slowly inching towards the state where everything is slowly maybe going back to normal. And obviously, I say we're free. In a certain sense, we've been free all along, because there hasn't necessarily been a legal justification. Most of my life is, in a certain sense, back to normal. And maybe starting next week, there's a couple of things that I haven't been able to do that I might be able to do starting next week. So that's about it.
The biggest non-coronavirus story in Australia this week was the Eden Monaro Liberal National candidate car crash, and that's a pun, because Monaro was a type of Holden car when we did have the Holden brand and make cars in Australia, because Mike Kelly, he was the Labor MP for four of the past five terms. It's usually a bellwether seat that goes with whoever wins the election, but Mike Kelly, ex-ADF, quite respected down the aisle, he was able, the only time that he did lose the seat was when during the Abbott slide of 2013. So he has had to resign for health reasons. But even though it's a... It's now more a Labor, marginal Labor seat than a bellwether seat. At the state level, it's in southern New South Wales, right next to Canberra. The two New South Wales state MPs that overlap Ida Monaro are the New South Wales National Leader and Deputy Premier John Barilaro, and the New South Wales Liberal Transport Minister Andrew Constance, and they're from different parties, and the coalition agreements is that if there's no sitting member, then they can have what's known as a three-cornered contest. If it's a sitting Liberal or National MP, then they don't run against each other unless there's a retiring member or they don't hold the seat. And so there's been a lot of a media speculation about would they both run, would one of them run. Now, none of them are running. John Barilaro, he announced on Monday that he would not run. And the next day, Transport Minister Andrew Constance, he announced he was running. And he's got a bit of political capital because he was the face of the New South Wales bushfires. He's own property in his electorate of Bega nearly burnt down. He broke down on the ABC, and he was also the one that savaged Scott Morrison when he turned up to a town in his electorate and was run out by the locals, said that Scott Morrison got the welcome that he deserved. But his shortcomings, Andrew Constance, have been papered over in recent times, because as Transport Minister, he has been responsible for overseeing the overtime and over-budget light rail in the Sydney CBD, which has crippled small businesses in George Street, and on the first day it broke down. And also, yeah, he has responsibility for ports as well. So his role in the Ruby Princess disembarkment debacle hasn't gained the scrutiny it perhaps should have.
Yeah.
So he announced on Tuesday that he was running, but in following that, a leak to Sky News political reporter Andrew Clonell was text message exchanges between John Barilaro and the federal Nationals leader Michael McCormack, basically blasting him for the lack of support because he would be threatened by John Barilaro in Canberra, and said, "You'll never be considered our federal leader in my eyes." And of course, the Nationals at the beginning of this year federally had the spill where Barnaby Joyce ran against Michael McCormack. It seemed that Barnaby is too much damaged goods, but Barilaro, being the deputy premier in New South Wales, quite outspoken on water and energy policy, even though he is a social progressive, a could team up with Barnaby and the other disgruntled Nats to unseat McCormack, who's seen as a weak leader. So it's reopened all those wounds today. And then on Wednesday in Sydney's Daily Telegraph, even though Barilaro and Constance said they're good mates, Barilaro has been revealed in private conversations to call Andrew Constance the C word, which he hasn't confirmed and denied. So on Wednesday, Andrew Constance announced that he was withdrawing because he believed he'd be white-anted. And then there was rumours that Tony Abbott was going to be the candidate, but that turned out to be a fake news. And so it's just a mess, and reminded everybody of the tensions in the federal and New South Wales National Party, and within the New South Wales Liberal Party, because even though Scott Morrison has fought with, and his ministers have fought with Dan Andrews, they're also fighting half the time with their Berejiklian government in New South Wales, which is Liberal. So it's just lifted the lid again on all of these internal machinations. And then later in the week, it was revealed that John Barilaro went to his second property, his farm, and might have contravened the lockdown provisions. But because New South Wales relaxed their restrictions last Friday, that yep. saved him, even though he was quite savage on Don Harwin, the minister who went to his holiday house on the Central Coast and had to resign for it. So all the old wounds in New South Wales Liberal and National Party have just been open again. And obviously during a pandemic, everybody hates that. And Labor, with their candidate, the mayor of Bega, Christy McBain, is basically, she's already won it.
Yeah, our election is looking to be a bloodbath anyway, essentially. There's still questions over whether Simon Bridges will survive to be the National Party leader come the election. I think he will be. He's actually been handed a little bit of a saving grace here in the leaks that have happened in the Labour Party, because now we have the Crown Law advice leaked out into the open. Following up on that, Jacinda Ardern, and since it's 9 o'clock now, people will
yeah, because we've got Logan Spalding, his premiere of his What's He On About Now is a minute away, so we'll keep it brief.
So we'll keep it very brief there. So Jacinda Ardern sent to all of her ministers a memo to tell people, you know, don't talk about the various documents that we've released, et cetera. Sorry, don't talk about the leaks. Don't talk about all of the stuff. We'll instruct you. And that memo to not talk about the leaks has been leaked. So the cracks are starting to show on both sides, where they're, we're clearly moving into election mode. People have actually blamed Winston Peters for the leaks, although it's probably not that likely. It would be a little bit too obvious for
he's
that.
Been on our media quite a bit. I saw him on ABC.
He's in hardcore campaign mode
on the same day.
Yeah, so hardcore campaign mode as well. And you know, so it's the games have begun, and I do think the election is on for September. Seen some questions here in the chat as well around New Conservative. But you know, the 5% threshold in New Zealand's MMP elections, so if you can get 5% of the general votes, that's really where a party needs to be to truly exist as a force in Parliament. That's the goal there, and obviously it's going to have to be. Will we see the Greens disintegrate in Jacinda's shadow? Will we see, will people no longer trust Winston Peters? And on it goes. How badly will the National Party suffer due to the continued love for Jacinda Ardern and her being seen as being so successful? I mean, the polling, internal polling in the Labour Party is showing them being able to govern alone easily. And we've got all that set up just as we're probably heading into a massive economic recession and an election. So it is going to be a very interesting year. And we will be here every single week. Every Friday, we'll be here to cover the week's events. And thank you very much for watching the show. And we are going to wrap things up.
Yeah, and as I mentioned at the beginning of the show, the unfolding story this afternoon is the twist in the NRL not anti-vaxxers, vaxxer refusals, the trio who said they're not going to be coerced into getting a flu vaccine. They've now been stood down by the NRL because there's political pressure on Scott Morrison by Scott Morrison and Queensland Premier Anastasia Palaszczuk that they don't want Sporting Coast to flout the health advice. So that could derail the NRL coming back by May the 28th as scheduled here. So the game, it seems, has resumed, but it's off the field with this vaccination standoff, which, as I said, I'm pro-choice when it comes to the flu vaccine.
And the that's all for the show, everyone. Thank you again for watching.
You
can find more of me on rightminds.nz and on the bfd.co.nz. And Tim, you've got some other shows coming up this week.
Yes. Next Monday, Wilms Front is back, 7 p.m. Melbourne time on YouTube and DLive. In the meantime, check out theunshackled.net for the Unshackled Productions archive and for latest commentary. Have a good weekend, everybody. Stay safe from both housewives, but from our dear leaders as well.
That's right. Good night. Stay safe and stay free.
Mm. Super chat right at the end, which we forgot to read out. Origin Adamus, $5 New Zealand dollars. Would you consider growing a beard? If you did, do you think it would merge into your chest hair? Well, we're not going to know that because I'm not going to do it. There we go. That's the epilogue.
We'll see if anybody stuck around for it.
Yeah.